Committee to order. Members, we've got three bills this morning. Senate File 2696 and Senate File 2701 are the department policy and technical bills that we've heard in this committee earlier. They are included in the omnibus tax bill that has passed the Senate, but I wanted to get them up to the floor. Everybody understands we need to have vehicles available to somehow conclude this session in the final week. So I want to be able to get them up to the floor so that they're available. So Senator Scoy moves Senate File 2696 be recommended to pass. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. Senator Scoy moves Senate File 2701 be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. Senator Cohen is here this morning with House File 2037, and we have a delete all amendment to get it in the shape he'd like to have it in. I think maybe Senator Cohen will put the delete all on before we have you walk through it. So Senator Scoy moves the 812 amendment to House File 2037. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. A-12 is adopted. Senator Cohen, there's one small technical amendment to the A-12, I understand.
The A-14 amendment.
Council, A-14.
These are... these have already been passed.
I could limit, yeah.
Council, why don't you tell us what the A-14 does?
Mr. Chairman, the A-14 amendment, the first couple of additional sections there are in the education area, some additional provisions relating to the aid payment percentage, and then reductions in appropriation to general education aid. On page 10, the deletion of Section 2, I believe there was a duplication in the higher education area. Page 20, or the page 20 amendment was the duplication of a provision that is elsewhere dealing with higher education. Page 58 is a tax provision, and that dealt with the temporary limits on the payments for Sustainable Forest Act, and that is meant to impact just fiscal year 2011, not fiscal year 2010.
So, Senator Cohen, this gets the bill in the shape you'd like to have it in?
That's correct.
On the A-14 amendment, Senator Scoy moves the A-14. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. The A-14 is adopted. Senator Cohen, Senate File 2037 as amended is now in the shape you'd like it in front of the committee.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Yes.
Senator Pogomar,
yes. The A-12 is on.
Correct. Amended by the A-14. Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, actually House File 2037, although I've admired the way you've handled the committee, maybe you just want to make a quick motion and as you've been doing, and we could just leave. But I...
Senator Cohen, you're not a member of the committee. How would you make a motion?
No, I was suggesting maybe you could make the motion. Our Senator Scoy could make the motion as he's been doing, and we could just dispense.
Senator Scoy is the very powerful vice chair of the Senate Tax Committee.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
The Finance Committee, I just assume the Finance Committee operates much like this.
If...
Maybe you have too many members on the Finance Committee.
I only wish. Well, Mr. Chairman, the House File 2037 is obviously the bill that we're using to balance the budget with. And as members can tell, there are certain pieces that are kind of on the fly, and that's been necessitated by the Supreme Court's decision from Wednesday. That decision, I think that opinion was issued at 10 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday. It's now Monday morning. Obviously, things have been moving very, very quickly. And I'm going to guess members of the Tax Committee are aware that in the Finance Committee on Saturday morning, we had most of the finance provisions. Again, some pieces were not prepared quite in time. the intent, and again, members might be aware that the bill came to the floor Saturday morning. As we thought about it, we felt it was more appropriate to send it back to the Tax Committee, as we did first thing this morning, to have the inclusion of the revenue pieces. And let me just state, in terms of an overall solution to this, let me make sure members understand the numbers very briefly. The budget problem is $2.962 billion. That reflects the Supreme Court's opinion relative to the governor's cuts and how the governor handled them. That also reflects what is left to do during this year's session, separate from the Supreme Court opinion, in terms of $536 million, which we had thought was going to be, well, it is going to be the completion of Senator Berglund's Conference Committee, the Health and Human Services Conference Committee, which is a solution of $114 million. Additionally, obviously, there's still a gap in the budget. This bill takes care of that additional gap. Some of the money is contingent upon receipt of the federal money, but there's a drop-dead date of June 15th in the bill. So if that federal money does not come, then that money will be used for ratifying some of the governor's cuts as are in the bill. Let me also make sure, and unfortunately I misstated this at the press conference because I had an old sheet of numbers just in terms, just so members understand what this bill is comprised of. Almost 68%, 59% of the bill is to deal with the governor's borrowing from the schools and takes care of that problem for school districts throughout the state of Minnesota. The cuts in the bill represent approximately 25%. The new revenue in the bill is 15%, and there's a fund transfer of approximately 1.5%. So obviously this bill, the vast, vast majority of this bill deals with cuts and a rectification of the governor's borrowing against the school districts. What we thought, and Mr. Chairman, you and I have talked about a presentation on this bill. I just want to offer some of the differences between finance and tax that are contained within the A-12 amendment, even though this is the Tax Committee. Again, this is a relatively unusual procedure, but it's an unusual time, an unusual situation, to say the least. What we did not have in finance on Saturday morning were the governor's cuts from the Human Services Division, or from the Human Services area, Health and Human Services area, because, again, that conference committee is out. And so there's an interplay between that conference committee and this bill, as I've mentioned. I can't speak for what's going to happen in the conference committee. I know in the Senate bill, Senator Berglund accepted some of the governor's cuts for the purposes of her conference committee. So what we did in establishing a number for this bill is we worked with Senator Berglund and Representative Huntley to figure out what number we should plug in for this bill out of Human Services. That was not available Saturday morning. Again, it's a reflection of the work that's being done. Second, it's not an appropriation as such. It covers a deficit. But we do have a number of $36 million to cover the deficit in student aid. I think there's been some significant concern on the part of people in both parties that we're making it tougher and tougher for kids in the state to go on to higher education. So that deficit is plugged in this bill. Now, that's part of the contingency relative to the federal money. So that's taken into account. And the Health and Human Services piece is contingent upon the federal money. So if the federal money is not available, those human service cuts do go into effect. If that money is not available, we still have the 36 is also dependent on the receipt of that money. The rest of the federal money, if this bill passes and becomes law, will be used to start paying back the school borrowing that the governor began last year. So that additional money will go back to the schools. And so we're trying as best we can. Obviously, schools are not being held harmless based upon what happened last year, but we're trying to rectify that as best we can by taking care of that borrowing from last year. I should also mention in this bill, in Article 2, we have a cash flow article, and that's relevant to both the Finance and the Tax Committee. And this language was in the bill Saturday morning. This is word for word the language that the administration has asked for on several occasions. They remain quite concerned about the cash flow of the state and where the monies are going, and so they're asking for some of these delayed payments to deal with the cash flow situation. So this is not language that that I've invented or that's come out of the Senate. This has come in its entirety from management and budget. Mr. Chairman, in looking at the spreadsheet, I think those are, by and large, the significant differences between Saturday morning and today relative to finance pieces. And so obviously what's quite relevant to this committee is how we've dealt with that smaller revenue piece. And certainly, Mr. Chairman, members, I can assure you that Senator Bach and I have been over backwards in working with House counterparts to try to ensure that a revenue piece, one, made sense in terms of public policy, that was obviously the chairman's authority, and that secondly, that and most importantly, that we try to minimize what we do so that clearly we are looking at what is a bill by and large of taking care of the borrowing and the cuts. I'll just make one other comment, Mr. Chairman, because it looks out of place. But Article 15, the Special Revenue Fund, as the chairman's indicated, given where we are and the hurry-up nature of this, we were looking for appropriate vehicles. Representative Solberg and I had a bill requested by management and budget relative to the Special Revenue Fund to make sure that all special revenue funds were separated from the general fund and make sure there was a clarity of that. And that's Article 15. So that was the original bill and was not considered to be a substantive bill. So, Mr. Chairman, those are the differences between Saturday and today, separate from your article of the bill.
Senator Cole, maybe, and members, maybe I'll go through the tax provisions in here that I've been talking with Senator Cohen about. If you look at, it's probably easiest to just look at the spreadsheet. You'll see on line 3 the tax provisions in the bill raise in FY11 $435.4 million. And in the next biennium, 12 and 13, $597.5 million. If you go down to line 26, you'll see on line 26 the political contribution refund program. We took the governor's cut in that for $10.4 million in FY11. Line 27, the Sustainable Forest Initiative, we took the governor's cut in that of $4.3 million. Line 29, the renter's credit, we took the governor's cut there of $52.3 million. Line 29, we took the governor's numbers on the reduction in aids and credits. And then on line 30, you'll see, because of anticipated levy back by local governments, we anticipate an additional property tax refund obligation of $2.7 million in the current biennium. And on line 31, you'll see the income tax interactions because of the higher property taxes is $2.9 million in the current biennium. And then line 32 was enacted into law earlier this year. Last year we had raised some revenue and moved it from one year to the next. We called it a special timing account. That actually was taken in the earlier cut bill that was passed, but we're carrying it on this spreadsheet as a $3.8 million contribution on the part of the tax committee to resolve the state budget deficit. The income tax provisions start on page 67 of the bill, Article 16, and what is in here is a fourth tier on the income tax at $200,000 married joint return of 9.15%. And just to remind everybody, the current rate on that income is 7.85. So it's on 200,000 dollars of taxable income married joint. If you're single, that number is 113,000.1. If you're head of household, the 9.15 rate applies to your income over $170,350. And just for the benefit of the public that's watching, this is not on your earned income. This new tax rate applies to your taxable income, so it applies after you've taken your deductions and whatever credits that you might be or eligible for. The other piece of it is you'll notice online. Starting at the bottom of page 68, you'll see that when the state runs a surplus of over $500 million, if the February 2013 forecast indicates the state has an unrestricted fund balance of $500 million, so that's at the end of the next biennium, then the tax rate would go back to 7.85%. So there is a trigger in the bill that once the economy recovers and state revenue starts to recover, the income tax rate will go back to current law. The other piece, in order to, because it's so difficult to raise a lot of money with a fourth tier, the other piece in here is an acceleration of the Bush tax cuts that are going to expire. They will expire next year. We expire them 1 year early. So essentially, we come out of federal conformity relative to our income tax. And that'll, by expiring those tax cuts 1 year early, allows us to get $40 million of revenue in the current biennium. That is included as part of the $435 million that the bill raises. So the 435 is raised in two ways, a fourth tier in the income tax, a 200,000 married joint, and the recognizing the phase out of the Bush tax cuts 1 year early. It brings the additional piece to bring us to $435 million in the current biennium in FY11. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You answered my question. I wanted to know what the fourth tier netted. What was the net on the fourth tier? You just said it, $435 million.
That's the total that includes the 40. Early recognition of the expiration of the Bush tax cuts. And Senator Johnson, the rate is 9.15%. Any questions on the tax piece, members? I think, I think everybody in this room knows the dire financial and economic circumstances that our state is facing. And it's never easy to vote for tax increases. There's nothing easy about asking people to pay more. It's much easier to spend money or be able to reduce taxes, and many of us have been doing that, I think it would, for a long time. I know when I first came here in 95, we started reducing taxes, and it seems like we've been doing that all along until last year, I guess, we started to look to go the other direction. But these are very, very difficult financial and economic challenges our state faces, and I realize this is a very tough vote for many of us. But we do have, I think, a constitutional obligation when we were sworn into office to have a balanced budget. And that's what we're going to have to do before we go home. Senator Cohen, anything further?
Mr. Chairman, not on my part.
Any questions from the members of the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, regarding the acceleration of tax cuts, the Bush tax cuts, $40 million being taken out of an investment quality of trying to create new jobs or expanding one's business. That's how it was sold to the Congress. Could that have a negative effect by now impacting those businesses during a bad economy? Do we ever, How does this? I guess the question is how does your proposal affect the economy by raising taxes and clicking off an acceleration of tax cuts, which is essentially not accepting the tax cuts from the Bush era by 1 year early?
Well, they're just so that everybody's clear, they are going to expire. That's the current law. We just are recognizing the expiration of them 1 year earlier than they're going to expire federally. I would say to people in the business community what the impact on them might be, because certainly some business owners will fall into the fourth tier. If your income is not more than $200,000 married joint, there is no impact of this on you. I suspect that many business owners, in order to avoid any additional tax liability, will invest some additional money in their business, increase some of their deductions in order to make sure that they don't now get triggered into a higher tax rate. So, Senator Limmer, I think it depends on the business. I think a lot of businesses may take this opportunity to make an additional investment in their business to avoid some additional tax obligations. So I don't think it would be fair to just assume that small business owners are going to be forced into a situation of paying higher taxes, because they certainly have the opportunity on that income, that taxable income over $200,000. If they didn't want to be in this bracket, they simply could invest some additional money in their business to bring their taxable income down.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Limmer,
I don't think it's too hard to imagine that when you increase taxes in this grade of taxpayer who own businesses, who have deductions, who now are going to be paying not only more tax in an early tax hit due to taking off that accelerated tax cut from the Bush era, number one. Number two, we're raising their taxes. I look at this bill and I'm thinking, well, we're at a crossroads. Crossroads is we're going to increase taxes. Those individuals that take those risks in their business, especially now, are going to hire less people in order to make up for the increase in taxes, and they won't invest in any capital investments in their company. So that's going to have an impact on our economy and our job market versus let's keep government growing. That's basically where we are. That's the crossroads that we're at.
Well, Senator Limmer, I think going forward, you know, back to our constitutional obligation to balance a budget, I think the trend that Minnesota is on in squeezing our K-12 system to the point where there are schools in the state going on a four-day week, I think that long-term is going to have a significant impact on our business community. If we continue to not invest in K-12 to develop the next generation of workers in this state, and we continue to put more and more pressure on tuition, so smaller and smaller number of the next generation of workers are able to complete a higher education, the long-term impact of that to the business community is we haven't, as a state, done the best job we could do to develop the workforce, and businesses will be faced with a decision. If they are thinking about expanding, they either, because they'll expand only if they have the available pool of trained workers that they need, and if the state does not invest in the workforce, businesses will make a decision to either not expand here because they can't find the qualified workers, or to spend a significant amount of money on skill enhancement of their workforce, and somebody's going to spend the money to make sure that workers have the skill set that they need to be productive employees in a business. And I would argue it's a very important role that the state plays in partnership with our business community. So we can all just pretend we don't have to raise any new revenue, and we can continue to starve our K-12 system and starve our higher educational system. But in the long run, there are impacts to the economy by not investing in our workforce. So we could ask Senator Stump to make cuts in K-12 or Senator Pappas to make additional cuts in higher ed. But there is an impact to the business community. All the studies that I have looked at, when businesses are making a decision whether to relocate or expand, that the overriding criteria that goes into their decision is what is the available pool of workers, not the tax rates. It's the available pool of workers. And second, it is the transportation infrastructure. And then taxes are important. Somewhere down the list, in some studies third, some studies lower, is the relative tax burden that a state has. But I'm, Senator Limmer, we all have a constitutional responsibility to balance the budget. And it's either going to be done through some revenue, or it's going to be done in all cuts, or some kind of an accounting gimmick of some kind to kind of kick the can down the road for the next legislature and the next governor to deal with. I just think the responsible thing to do is to try to put some revenue on the table, not only for the current biennium, but to try help with what we know is a multi-billion dollar deficit looming in the next biennium. So this is not a vote that I look forward to making, but I do think I have an obligation to do what I can do to try and balance the budget, because I agreed that I was going to abide by the Constitution when we all took the oath. And the votes aren't always easy, and there are members up on the floor of the Senate and the House where it's going to be a lot tougher vote for them than it's going to be for me, because there's just nothing popular about having to increase revenue. Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, are you expecting a vote on this bill today, since it was never noticed to anyone? No one could have prepared an amendment, and you're just going to pass it because you can? Is that the plan?
Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, this is my bill. No, we're passing it not because we can, but because the Supreme Court ruled at 10 o'clock on Wednesday morning, 10 days before the end of the session. And there's no question, I don't know if you were in the room when I started, there's no question we're accelerating this in a way that in the normal course of things we probably would not do. But given the circumstances we find ourselves in, there is simply not a choice. I think the people of Minnesota expect us, whatever we're going to do, that we have to do it in an expeditious way. That's why it's here this morning.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ormond, I think to your point, I had a conversation, Senator Pogemiller is not here, I had a conversation with Senator Pogemiller that that due to the timing considerations, it would seem fair that once this committee, assuming we have the votes to pass this bill out and up to the floor, that there needs to be adequate time for members to prepare amendments. And Senator Pogemiller and I had a discussion about that, that maybe once this comes up to the floor, we take a recess to either caucus or give people ample opportunity to prepare amendments to the bill. And I don't want to speak for him, but that is a conversation that he and I and Senator Cohen had earlier today. So I expect, unless something changes, that opportunity will be provided. Senator Ortman.
Senator Bach, I can't believe that the governor has changed his view, but is there some indication from the governor's office that this is anything that he's interested in the negotiations that you all are having with him? Maybe Senator Pogemiller can answer that.
I think, Senator Ortman, why don't you ask the question again? I have not personally met with the governor, so I have, other than what I read in the newspaper, I have no way to judge. I know he's been asking all along this session for us to ratify his unallotments. I can just say in the tax area, we have taken all of the unallotments that he made, and they're contained in this bill. So, but I haven't personally met with the governor, but maybe if you want to ask that question to Senator Pogemiller, he would have a better idea than I. Senator Ortman.
Senator Pogemiller, is there any reason to think that the governor has changed his position? I think most of us would be rather surprised. So I'm wondering about the status of negotiations when it looks like we're going to pass a tax increase that the governor is going to veto.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, the governor has not shown any flexibility yet. And I don't know. You know, I hope he'll rethink that. I hopefully read that column this weekend where Governor Cui suggested he rethink his is rigidness. But no, I have no reason to believe that he's become flexible or willing to compromise.
Senator Ortman, anything further?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure that this shows any flexibility either on the part of Senate leadership. And I would say it's rather troubling that you would pass this bill today with blindfolders on, or with blindfolds on. It seems like you don't care what the public thinks because you've put this bill up today without a hearing notice. You're expecting a vote so that there's real no opportunity to change what's in this provision. I'd say that Senator Bach has, you know, set out there for the public that there might be a Vikings option. We know there's interest in the Racino option. There's been, more than 60% of Minnesotans would like to see that be part of our option. So it seems to me that you're either acting way too fast or way too slow. Because the way too slow part is, there shouldn't have been any surprise to members of the Senate that the Supreme Court might have ruled the way they did. And we had 3 months to respond or at least create a plan for that. This shows like there was no plan at all. At the last minute, we're just going to dump a bill in, get some votes because we have enough votes, send it to the Senate floor without any input, no respect to the general public who might like to review this, folks that might like to see if there are other options available and see if they can't build the support for other options.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ortman, kind of 2 points to what you said. I think many of us were surprised by the Supreme Court's action. I know the governor had a press conference the day before the Supreme Court ruled, and I just remember seeing the bold print in the Pioneer Press, and it said, balance the budget or I will. I mean, I remember the words, I will, and it was in the bold type in the story. Now, that implies to me that if we don't get it done, he's going to unallot further. The next day, the Supreme Court ruled that he did not have the power to exercise unallotment under the current circumstances. And Senator Ortman, I don't believe it's fair to say there hasn't been a public notice about this meeting, because I called my staff last night and a notice went out last night to all of the members of this committee that there was going to be a tax committee hearing this morning.
Mr. Chair, I don't mean to interrupt, but we try and let the public know, too, so that they can come. I mean, I think our general rule is 3 days.
There's not a rule that says that. Senator Dibble.
Just a quick point to Senator Ortman's point that there's no flexibility on our part, or on the part of leadership in this bill. Senator Cohen, I think, did a nice job of laying out the proportions of cuts and revenue, et cetera, that this bill reflects. And it takes a great deal of the governor's illegal unallotments and codifies them into law. Significant flexibility there on the part of those who put together this bill. Only a small proportion is covered through some revenue, and also takes the administration's request on delaying payments so we create some cash flow position for the state. Significant amount of compromise, significant amount of flexibility. We're voting for things that I have long and hard fought against, resisting, for example, this 50-some million bucks, 52.3 that we're taking from renters right out of their pockets that the governor unallotted illegally.
Mr.
Senator Pogman.
Well, I just want to reiterate 85% governor's position, 15% revenue. And Senator Ortman, I encourage you, Senator Senjum, and your minority, to have your plan ready for tomorrow. If the governor does veto this, I intend on taking your plan to balance the entire budget up on the floor. So I would hope you would start putting it together, because that will have to be an entire cut plan. And I would like to give you the opportunity to vote on it.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think there's any surprise that there are people, myself among them, who think that you can't just cut your way out of our issues, out of our problem in the state, and you certainly can't tax your way out. And this is it's a significant increase on a certain group of people, but I think it's important. I was listening to the two press conferences, and I heard the minority leader say that we were going to be taxing a young couple who had worked all their lives, which was
interesting in itself, but had worked all their lives to strive to earn $100,000. Each of them were earning $100,000. I believe that the tax increase is imposed on the taxable income, not on the salary that, you know, the gross. And I know we all know that here, but I don't think that it's necessarily intuitive with the public. So I think it's important to make that distinction, that that's not true, that a young couple who have strived all their lives to now earn $200,000 as a couple are going to see a tax increase. I don't think that's going to happen. And I just think we need to look at what's balanced. And, I mean, this is really even still lopsided. There's enormous cuts in areas that most of us don't want to make. So, and I don't think there's any surprise here. I think we talked about this on Saturday in terms of there would be some kind of revenue, tax increase, if you will, if you insist, to help balance the budget. And then I'm just really tired. I was driving home, and I don't usually suffer road rage, but this really got to me, and I was actually, I could hear it in the tunnel. And I heard somebody on the radio saying that we had failed to send the governor a balanced budget last year. I'm just tired of that. That's not true. And we are, again, trying to send a balanced budget. Now, it doesn't balance perhaps the way he would like it to be balanced, but to be honest with you, it actually comes closer to meeting the terms of the definition of balance than just making cuts. So
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, I don't do a lot of appellate work, and maybe you do a lot more appellate work than I do. So I don't presume to have had any significant insight into what the Supreme Court was going to do or not do on Wednesday morning. I'd been saying for a couple of weeks that I thought, just a guess, that given where we were in the legislative session and given the assertion by the court previously that they would rule in a fairly expeditious manner because of the legislative session, that an opinion issued in the last couple of weeks of the session would not in any way have the scope that this opinion had. That was obviously my ill-informed judgment, because the scope of the decision was very far-reaching. I believe the opinion caught everybody by surprise, as the chairman has indicated. It certainly caught the governor by surprise. And I think if you look at the history of this session, certainly if we'll take the supplemental finance bill that we passed and was signed into law by the governor several weeks ago, that bill went through the process. We worked through everything with the separate finance divisions. We didn't have a tax component in that bill. We had some cuts from this committee in that bill. We didn't have any kind of a revenue increase. That bill was worked through a very lengthy legislative process. You suggest what we should do or not do relative to noticing a bill, hearing a bill, having input. The input I've heard from my district and what I've sensed from my colleagues is the input we're hearing from people in the state is take care of this and get it done. And today's Monday morning. I think, as everybody on this committee is aware, we can't do anything a week from today. That constitutional deadline of next Monday is simply a formality, that we can't take any votes next Monday. So this is an attempt to deal with a very, very unique and unusual situation. I can tell you, I guess I shouldn't speak for Senator Pogamiller or Senator Bach, but basically we've been working through the night over these last several days in an effort to put together a plan that we think meets the needs of the state, as has been pointed out, goes far beyond meeting the governor. I mean, Senator Dibble indicated his dislike of provisions in this bill. And certainly there's been some real back and forth among many members of the Senate as to their displeasure with what is in this bill. I will tell you, as the author of the bill, I don't think it's a perfect bill. To the contrary, my preference would be to vote against my own bill, because I think it does some things to the state that I have some concerns about. But we find ourselves in a fiscal and constitutional crisis, and that's when the people in this state expect us to make some very, very tough decisions and do what we can to keep the services and the basic needs of the state running. And so your suggestion and assertion that we're trying to spring this on anybody, I just take offense at.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I'm disappointed at some of the rhetoric here because clearly when we reconvened in February, the leadership in the Senate could have moved to ratify the unallotments or to reinstate the unallotments, but chose not to. And so we progressed until this point. But clearly those options were available if there was a consensus at any time. So I hope this rhetoric that the governor's actions were illegal will be set aside now in favor of being more consensus-driven. And the whole concept that the legislature passed a balanced budget last year and gave it to the governor is very misleading. I was here. I know the facts. I know when we saw that balanced budget. It was at 20 minutes to midnight. And so the game playing began much before that. The game playing was let's send up appropriations bills one at a time and see what the governor will do, but not tell him how we're going to pay for it. That's what happened last year. And so if DFL leadership had actually met with the governor, revealed the whole story, talked to him about it in good faith, the outcome might very well have been different. And it was disappointing for the state. And I would say for the last 3 months, it's been very disappointing that we've been sitting around here choosing not to act when we very much could have acted over the last 3 months and have chosen not to. So stalling, waiting until the last minute, being given this decision, I do think that we could have been more thoughtful about this the entire time. I wish we had been.
Senator Ortman, there's been a great deal of uncertainty around this session based on when will and what will the Supreme Court say. The governor's own budget that he presented to the legislature scored $387 million of federal money. Governor's own budget. And then later we found out that the number wasn't 387, it was really 408. And I think everybody has been wondering for weeks whether that money was going to develop in time for us to include it in a budget solution. And then probably, Senator, I don't want to speak for Senator Cohen, but in the last week or so, we've learned that the $408 million was not going to arrive by the end of session. There's just been a great deal of uncertainty as to how this session might conclude, and nothing that any of us, including the governor, have any control over. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been looking at some of the details on the proposal, and I noticed that in 2013 there may be a click-off of this higher rate income tax level, provided that there's a half a billion dollars in surplus for that year predicted. Now, I don't think we've seen a surplus in the state since the Ventura days. That's about 12 years ago. So I think it's probably unlikely that there will ever be a click-off in 2013 of this particular tax. You know, as a result...
To that point, Senator Limmer, I don't think that's quite accurate. The 2008 session, we were still carrying a $653 million budget reserve. And in the budget resolution in the 2008 session, the legislature and the governor agreed to use $500 million of that budget reserve to balance the budget in '08. But we did come into the 2008 session, and at this date in the 2008 session, we were still carrying a $653 million budget reserve.
Well, Mr. Chair, the way I read it, it doesn't say anything about the existing reserves in 2013. It just says equal or exceeds a half a billion dollars. So I'm reading it the way it's proposed to us today. And I don't think in a poor economy we're going to reach that. So in effect, this might, maybe we haven't thought it over, but it's a de facto tax increase that very well will become permanent. Once again, we tell the people it's temporary, but quite honestly, you know, the people have caught on to that old saw a long time ago. Now, when I also look at the whether or not the federal extension of Medicare dollars will come in, either in May or June, there's nothing that clicks off the income tax there either, according to this proposal. So once again, we have no way to back out of this tax increase. And when you look at the end result, Minnesota's maximum income tax rate will go up based on this DFL tax proposal. That's the answer. And as a result, we go from the 9th to 10th highest income tax rate in the country to number 5. We're just this proposal brings us a 0.5% below California's income tax rate. And we all know where California is going. Just because they increase taxes and have high income tax, it doesn't mean that they bring fiscal sanity, much less fiscal security, to their state, because they aren't controlling their spending.
Senator Cohen, if the $408 million from the federal government materializes, this bill were to become enacted into law, if the federal money materializes, what would happen to it?
Mr. Chairman, principally, we pay back the borrowing from the schools, the school districts around the state. That's principally what happens with the 408. And I might add, relative to the 408, I started the session quite skeptical when the governor presented the 387 in his budget. I was the person who publicly voiced skepticism as to whether or not we would see that money. I've had both myself and staff have had Mr. Mossman, as well as a couple of people from partisan staff, people in my staff, have attempted to stay on top of what happens with the 408. And 6-7 weeks ago, I was quite comfortable booking the money. Starting about 3 weeks ago, I became quite uncomfortable booking the money. I can tell you that Representative Lynn Carlson and myself were working on contingent plans last week in the absence of the money when the Supreme Court decision hit. But certainly if the money does show up, we start by going back to the school districts in this state and start to pay them back, not the totality, but we start to pay them back based upon the governor taking money away from the school districts. We start to redress that.
Any other questions, members? Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I just, you know, it's worth contemplating the fact that studies that we've seen by business-funded interests and nonpartisan and academic interests tell us that the wealthiest in the state over the last few years are paying far less than the rest of us, 9% overall versus 12% for the rest of us. The decisions of the governor, state budget decisions, have driven taxes down to the local level, driving up property taxes that the rest of us pay and pick up. We have this terrible cash flow problem because of irresponsible decisions, budget decisions that the governor has made. We now know that, we're talking about businesses before, that overall we rank 15th from the bottom with taxes that business pay, business taxes, and we're right in the middle of the pack overall on what people pay in taxes relative to the rest of the country. So all this rhetoric about being super high tax, et cetera, just doesn't stack up according to business-funded studies and nonpartisan, well-researched studies.
Well, more than nonpartisan, Senator Dibble, the net effective tax rates that people often talk about, saying the wealthy don't pay their fair share, let's just be clear, that research has been done by the Minnesota Department of Revenue, and it's more than nonpartisan. It's our own state department, state agency, that publishes the tax incidence document that indicate that wealthier Minnesotans don't pay the same share of their income in state and local taxes. Senator Ortman.
To that point, Mr. Chair, was the Department of Revenue tax incidence study, was there a cutoff at $200,000 for married joint filers as the wealthy that aren't paying their share? I thought that that was a higher rate of income, if I recall.
Senator Ortman, I don't remember. We all remember the really low-income people have about an 18% net effective tax rate, and then it comes down, and then the curve starts to go up again, and it kind of makes the shape of a bell, and people in the middle, and I don't know exactly where the middle is, pay 12.3%, and then somewhere in that $200,000 range, the line starts to trend down again, and at about 500,000, I believe the percentage is somewhere between 8% and 9%, rather than the 12.3% that really middle-income Minnesotans are percentages at. Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to confirm that your quantitative measure isn't the study. The quantitative measure is how much revenue you're hoping to generate, and then you rolled back the runs to find out how far back you would have to implement the 9.15 in order to generate the revenues that you need.
Senator Ortman, Senator Cohen picked up as many as the governor's unallotments and some additional cuts that he could get, and then he asked me to raise $433 million to fill the hole. And I made a decision based on, do I want a higher rate or a broader group of Minnesotans to pay? We could have ran the rate up to 11%, which is where Hawaii is, and the number would have been something higher than $200,000 for a household. But I felt keeping the rate down some in the neighborhood of 9.15 and asking more Minnesotans to participate was better than having people say, from a perception standpoint, that we have the highest income tax rate in the country. I wanted to avoid that, just perceptually. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sedgwick.
Maybe just a couple comments. You know, we're here 15th week, first day of the 15th week, the last week. We've been around for a while. It doesn't really matter, you know, what's happened last year in the first 14 weeks, but now it really is time to make some decisions, and so we're all good people, and we all bring with us those thoughts and those experiences of our life, and so we sit here now determining what the direction of Minnesota ought to be during a time in history that's maybe unparalleled in terms of where we are financially, and we know just from the data, the last number I heard was 226,000 people on unemployment. It might even be more now. I saw a number the other day, 3.3% decrease in personal income. We go home, as I had a chance to yesterday, and we learn more about even within our individual families about crisis and hurt and pain and all of that. Certainly within the sphere of our friends, we hear what's going on. And it's hard. There's no question it's hard. And so we arrive at St. Paul again, once again today, and we think about how to fix it. And we think about what road we ought to go down. And it just seems to me, for those that think that this proposal will spur the economy, will grow jobs, will make things better, then they ought to vote for it. But it just seems to me that a proposal, as we have before us, that's going to put more pressure on businesses, that's going to make job production just a little bit harder, that's going to dissuade that entrepreneur that may want to do something in Minnesota but has some choices. It just seems to me that this proposal is contrary to everything that we ought to be thinking about in terms of moving this state forward. So we're all going to think about it. We're all going to vote on the floor, I guess, perhaps today or tomorrow on this. But I would only hope that as we think about where we are and where we need to go, that we think about the future of our state and we think about it from the standpoint of how do we grow the new prosperity. And government in and of itself can't do it. But what government can do is set forth the environment for prosperity to occur. And I just really personally question, Mr. Chair and members, whether this proposal that we have before us will in fact move our state forward, will grow that new prosperity, will give those people back home a sense of new life and new direction from the standpoint of growth and their personal jobs and careers and things like that. We have big decisions to make, Mr. Chair, and I guess we'll do it this afternoon or within the next day or so.
In the Senator Cohen, the department raised an issue with the cash flow language that you have in the bill. I believe the cash flow language that we're carrying is the governor's language, and the department has said that they thought they might need a small tweak to that in order to make it work. So just so that the committee knows, if the department is able to get that language to us before we vote on this on the floor, either I or Senator Cohen would have a small technical amendment requested by the department so that the governor's cash flow language works. I just want everybody to be aware of that. Senator Cohen, is that your understanding?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman. I think the department might be close to having the language now, but I wanted to make sure that we had the chance for our staff to review the language and make sure it works.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogelmaier.
Chairman, I move House File 2037 be recommended to pass.
Senator Pogelmaier moves House File 2037 as amended, as amended to be recommended to pass.
Roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Clerk will call the roll.
Dibble? Yes.
Johnson? No.
Lanza? Yes.
No.
Marty? Yes.
Yes.
Ortman? No.
Pogelmaier? Yes.
Rest?
Yes.
Shine?
Yes.
Sendrum?
No.
Boy.
Yes.
Chair votes yes. There are 9 yeses and 4 noes. The motion prevails. The bill is passed. Committee adjourned. I'm